You're listening to the Godfather and Gorney podcast on Rivals.com with your host, the Godfather of Recruiting, Mike Farrell.
The magic underwear is not working, and that's not our fault.
And national recruiting analyst, Adam Gorney.
We're like a 1-800 number almost.
That's right. Welcome back to another edition of the Godfather and Gorney podcast. We are back after a couple weeks hiatus, guys. I was out in Hawaii, really missed you out there for the Polynesian Bowl, but we are back and on the air. We got some rankings to talk about, so let me welcome in Mike Farrell and Adam Gorney, guys. Let's get right into it and talk rankings. We had a big story with JT Daniels reclassifying to the 2018 class, so we'll get to that. So Mike, just let me get your thoughts first on the new five stars and the rankings that came out today.
Yeah, I think we should start with Trevor Lawrence staying number one. You know, a lot of people saying that he had a bad All-Star game, which, you know, he did have a rough and bumpy start to the All-Star game. But what he did on that last touchdown drive just shows how good he is and how good he's been throughout the body of work of his career. So there's really no question for us as to who number one was. He's bell-to-bell guy. And, I've thought about this, and Josh Rosen was the best quarterback I had scouted in my whatever close to 20 years, but Trevor Lawrence has supplanted him because of his size, because of his mobility. He's a little bit more mobile than Rosen was at the same stage. He's got a stronger arm and he could fit the ball in. Rosen is a great quarterback, was a great high school quarterback, led a few more fourth quarter comebacks than Lawrence did, but this kid is absolutely special. Then there was the discussion, should JT Daniels be number two? And I know Gorney feels that Daniels is the best quarterback he's scouted, which includes Rosen. I think it's a really special quarterback year with three of the top four of our rankings being quarterbacks. And it'll be interesting to see how these guys pan out. Justin Fields finished number two. Then we had the debate whether Amon-Ra St. Brown should be ranked behind his teammate JT Daniels, who's a year behind him, who reclassified. There was a lot of discussion in the top four.
Yeah, the thing that really stood out to me was, you know, some years you go through the top five, top 10, top 15, and you're like, I don't know where people should be placed, or there's not really much of an argument because the group isn't that good. But this whole five-star group is absolutely loaded. I mean, all these guys showed up at their all-star games, and the ones that participated were incredibly good. Clearly the five-star guys that we had seen, and they deserve those rankings. And I think at the top, there wasn't really much debate. I think Trevor Lawrence really had proven himself to be the number one player. I don't think anybody surpassed him, nor should they have. He was excellent all week during practice, had a little bit of a shaky start in the game, but really settled down and showed who he was. I think the real debate was 2, 3, 4. You know, Amon-Ra St. Brown is probably the most dominant high school player this year, probably the best receiver in at least a decade in California. I know Mike doesn't like California wide receivers, but there's pretty good ones out there. Michael Thomas and many others.
Oh, you finally got one. Now you got one to brag about.
I had to do my research.
Finally got one.
But Amon-Ra St. Brown was absolutely phenomenal in San Antonio. He was so good that for about 2 or 3 days, that's all anybody was talking about out there, just how dominant he was. Justin Fields stayed number two, even though he didn't do anything, which is fine with me. I mean, he's a Georgia quarterback. He's going to Georgia. They've produced some pretty good ones through the years. And then JT Daniels moving from number one in 2019 to number four is hardly any drop at all, if any, because he was outstanding in San Antonio as well. But if you go down this list, Xavier Thomas, I absolutely love his, you know, physical mean spirit on the field. Micah Parsons, excellent. Yabi Anoma, another freak defensive end. Patrick Surtain, nobody ever beats him. Jamari Sawyer, you know, one of the toughest guards I've seen in a long time. You just go, and it's really an excellent group.
Deeper than 2019 by far. It's one of the deeper classes. I think maybe this is probably 2014 to me, which was a really, really good class. Obviously, a lot of those guys panned out in the draft. And, I might do a comparison between 2014 and these guys, you know, taking a look at who the top quarterback was back then compared to who the top quarterback is here, because that's the class it reminds me of. 2015 was solid class. 2016 was solid. 2017 was okay. But 2018, very, very deep. Now, there's a lot of question marks about some of these five stars. You know, some of these guys have maturity issues. You know, are they going to be patient enough to wait their turn? Are we going to see a lot of transfers out of this group? Some of these guys are just starting to scratch the surface of their potential. You know, will they hit a wall in their development? Some of these guys are very close to their ceiling. So I think it's a very, very strong group, but I was going through all 33 of them for my column on Tuesday and sort of looking at the bust factor for each. And, I do it this way. There's no high bust factor for a five-star. He wouldn't be a five-star if we felt he had a high bust factor, period. You know, so it's really just low and medium for me, because there's no such thing as none. There's no such thing as the perfect prospect who's never going to bust out either. I had a lot of mediums, a lot of guys that I was like, yeah, I could see him potentially being a bust, more than I expected in this class. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they pan out. The safest bet for me out of these 33 guys is Xavier Thomas. That's the safest bet. My number two was Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think both of them are going to be absolute superstars, and they have the work ethic to be excellent players. But Thomas, with his ability to play defensive end, or if that doesn't work out, he can play defensive tackle. And he's just a nonstop motor guy. I think he has a chance to be Christian Wilkins, not quite as athletic, but perhaps even more of a motor than Christian Wilkins at Clemson.
The thing that really stands out to me in this class is the wide receivers. A lot of them are short, you know, slot guys, get them out in space and make something happen. And I don't know if that's just the case this year or if it's more of a trend. Like the trend a few years ago was that outside linebacker defensive end hybrid, or the corner who can move to safety, or the safety who can move to linebacker, and those kinds of things. And now, you know, you have Amon-Ra St. Brown, who's probably about 6 feet tall. Jalen Waddle on his best day listed at 5'10", probably about 5'9". Darian Kendrick, I'd be hard-pressed to believe he's 6'1". Mark Pope, hard-pressed to believe he's 6'1". So you got these really speedy guys on the outside. You do have some of your taller wide receivers, those prototypical NFL outside receivers like Justin Ross and Terrace Marshall and those guys. But it seems like, you know, the guys that have really dominated these All-Star games, Kendrick was outstanding all week. Pope was very good all week. And we talked about St. Brown being the best all week. You're getting these guys who get the ball out in space and make something happen. And I think you're seeing that more, obviously more in college than ever before. And even now, much more in the NFL, where you just get the guy the ball.
Yeah, and that's the Antonio Brown factor. And then you go down the field. There's guys, you get your Julio Jones guys who are 6'4", 230 pounds, who are just physically dominant guys. But then you've got your Antonio Browns, you know, who can just kill you as an outside or as a slot receiver. You know, I think the Patriots offense and watching them beat the Jaguars yesterday just shows how important those little guys are. I mean, Edelman obviously didn't play, but how successful he was, how successful Wes Walker was, and how these offenses are starting to go to the shorter passing game, where some of these guys can put up big numbers and be very successful. You always want that 6'5 guy. You always want an AJ Green type. You know, that's why we've got Justin Ross, you know, ranked so high, and Justin Shorter, who's absolutely huge, higher than a Pope or a Waddle. But I think these guys, as the catch and run guys, can have a lot of success. It's a good mix though, because Marshall is a big kid. Shorter's huge. Ross is a big kid. Amon-Ra, certainly not a small kid at all. You know, I think the DeSean Jackson type, because he was one of our shortest five stars at wide receiver ever, and the Christian Kirk type, those two are in the Mark Pope, Jalen Waddle category. So you kind of hope they pan out. Obviously, Kirk panned out, and so did DeSean Jackson. But, you know, there's also Derek Williams, who was our number one guy way back, I think, in 2005, who, you know, had an average career at Penn State and didn't stick in the NFL for very long. So it's risky to have those guys ranked so high. I think the strength here, though, of this, you know, particular class, at least to me, is the defensive ends. You know, and I'm I'm very big on defensive ends. You know, obviously, it's we've seen it, you know, from Clowney to 2011, Kandichi 2013, and then having Hand and Garrett 1-2 in 2014, and then Byron Cowart, which turned out to be a big mistake, number one in 2015. Defensive end is still the position that I'm starting a football team with, aside from quarterback. And quarterbacks are so hard to project that there's probably going to be a three-star guy in this class that ends up being the top pick in the NFL draft. That's just the way it works. But defensive end-wise, you know, Thomas, I've already mentioned how high I am on him. Anoma is an absolute freak. So fast, once he fills out his frame, he's going to be that speed rushing end, where Thomas is more of an edge holder, strong side defensive end. Adam Anderson has been compared to Arden Key as a potential hybrid guy. And then KJ Henry, who, you know, had a very good Under Armour week, but just sort of slid three spots because we had so many guys moving up to five stars. And Brenton Cox could be great. And the guy that I look at outside of our five stars is the top four star, Tyreek Smith. I think he's a star talent. I think he's a guy who could be one we look back on and say, why didn't we pull the trigger and see what's happened?
Yeah, so I think it's no surprise that the guys right off of the five-star list, like Tyreek Smith, would be a guy. But Bray Walker is a guy we haven't seen a bunch of, but he was good at the Polynesian Bowl. He was solid at Army, but he wasn't really a standout guy, but a 6'6", 320-pound offensive tackle. And he's all of 6'6", 320 pounds. That might be a junior height and weight, because he was just a massive, just huge human being in San Antonio. I think Marquise Spiker is a guy who's going to have a huge career at Washington. He set the California state record for receiving yards. And then a few other ones that I like at the top of the list. Quay Walker, outside linebackers that go to Alabama are always first-round draft picks. Blue Smith is a guy I think is going to be a star at Ohio State. And I think Houston Griffith at Notre Dame and Brennan Eagles at Texas has a real chance, because the kid is really fast. He's got a kind of an odd running style. It doesn't look like he's as fast as he is, but he gets down the field, stretches it. He's a big outside wide receiver, something Texas really needs in that offense. And so I think those are guys that we might look back one day regretting not pulling the five-star trigger on.
And we got two guys that lost the fifth star, Devin Williams, who was a freak athlete, just didn't seem like he cared at Under Armour. And honestly, his coach there wanted to trade him to the other team because he just wasn't trying at all. And, you know, that worries you as a prospect. I mean, I don't know how he looked. How did he look at the Poly Bowl, Dave?
You know what? He did look good. He the first couple of days he was injured. So, you know, there were like 12 guys that set out with injuries. So it was tough to really gauge those guys, but the one day that I got to see him in practice, he did look good. I mean, he's got the frame, you know, to be a five-star receiver, but I agree, there may be some want to issues there, so we'll see with him.
Yeah, what I've always liked about Devin Williams is that he's incredibly tall, he's pretty well put together strength-wise, he's not just long and lanky, he really carries it well. Thing that I've always been concerned about with Devin Williams is just that ability with that killer instinct to go out and dominate things. And 7-on-7, he really wasn't, you know, a guy that really absolutely dominated and took over. He had big stats in his junior year. His senior year was marginal. So he's a guy that, you know, you have to question, is he just you know, looks like Tarzan kind of guy? The other part of that is plays like Jane, but I won't say that part. But he's a guy that, for his size and ability should go out and dominate against everybody. And sometimes he doesn't do that. So that's something that he's really going to have to focus on when he ends up at Oregon or USC, to really be pushed to, because he has that physical ability, he can take over and dominate things. He just doesn't do it consistently enough for me.
And Anthony Cook lost his fifth star as well, was, you know, really struggled quite a bit with the speed of everybody out in San Antonio. And people will be like, well, how could you drop a guy from five stars based on 1 week of performance? I mean, if Emory Jones was a five star heading into the Under Armour week, he was so bad that he would have lost his fifth star as well. We can do that because this is their chance to play against the best, you know, and
We've seen him at the five-star challenge and, you know, the opening, and we've seen him at our regional camps go against great players. But this is in pads, and if you're a and you're consistently getting beaten by every wide receiver and you're holding all the time and you're just a constant penalty waiting to happen, we can question your speed and your ability to cover at the next level. He could end up being a safety if he can't work out at corner, but he dropped 46 spots down to 54. That was the biggest drop of pretty much anybody, especially the five-star guys. And I'm sure Texas fans aren't thrilled with that. You know, they did get Caden Stearns as a five-star, but the defensive back group at Texas still looks great, you know, with B.J. Foster and DeMario Overshone and those guys. It's just that Cook really left a lot to be desired out there.
Yeah, it was, one of the best things about these events, Under Armour and Army, especially being, you know, the same week, for 2 years ago, I think it was back-to-back weeks, and there was a lot of burnout factor just, you know, after going to Under Armour for 8 days and then going to Army for 8 days, you just felt like, you know, you just weren't watching as closely as you should. But, you know, you saw Patrick Surtain in San Antonio. Taylor Stewart was in San Antonio. Buki was in San Antonio. Elijah Griffin was at Under Armour. And so you're comparing these guys and contrasting them to Cook, who really struggled. You know, Jalen Green was on the same field as Anthony Cook, and Jalen Green looked like a better football player. It was obvious which one was better, who could turn and run with receivers, who was winning 50-50 balls, who was shutting down their side of the field, where the quarterback wasn't looking. You know, these quarterbacks are pretty smart kids. When a corner is struggling, they're going to target and pick on him, and that's what they did with Cook in San Antonio. He's an athletic kid and he's good at the line of scrimmage, but once he has to turn and run and keep up with receivers, he loses them. He's two or three steps behind. So moving to safety might be an option. He's going to have to bulk up if that's the case. We're working on that speed. You know, I think it was just evident that Tyson Campbell and Buki and Surtain, I'm not going to put Taylor Stewart in that list just yet, even though he's a five-star, because he took some time off and was standing on the sidelines a little bit too much for my liking. But Elijah Griffin was a killer at Under Armour for at least a day or two. So you compare these guys during the same week in the very similar setting, and you come to a conclusion that some guys are just better than others.
And tight end was an interesting one as well. We didn't have anybody we thought was close to a five-star tight end, but Luke Ford finishing number one, a lot of people have Jeremy Ruckert at number one, but we had Brevin Jordan right behind him. If Brevin Jordan were 6'4" or 6'3", I think he could be a five-star guy, Evan Engram type. He's not that tall, but he is just a fantastic football player and very, very fast. He moved up 60 spots. Of course, for Miami fans, that's not nearly enough. They wanted him as a five-star. And Luke Ford is just a very, very tall kid. Now, you know, Georgia used to produce tight ends like crazy. That hasn't happened as far as development in quite a few years. Isaac Nada still hasn't broken out. But, you know, this kid's an absolute weapon. And I would imagine that he's going to get a lot of play there when it comes to a big target. So will Brevin Jordan have a better career than Ford? Will Ruckert have a better career than both of them? We're not really sure. But tight end was definitely one we discussed quite a bit.
Yeah, Luke Ford is a legit 6'7". He's a huge target. And I think this, more than anything, is a credit to Kirby Smart and his recruiting ability, because Isaac Nada was a very highly sought-after tight end, very highly ranked, and he's been basically non-existent in that Georgia offense. They don't really throw to tight ends much. When you have Nick Chubb and Sony Michel, you don't really have to. But for Luke Ford, the top tight end in the country, to pick Georgia when, you know, the top tight end Isaac Nada picked Georgia and doesn't get the ball thrown to him, I think that's a real credit to Kirby's recruiting ability. Ruckert, he's an athletic kid, the transition from Long Island football to elite level national competition, I think, set him back a little bit. Brevin Jordan, I've always liked. I thought he's a very fluid, athletic tight end, can be a mismatch problem, but the reservation we've had with him has been his height. And so, you know, I think he can overcome that at Miami. I think he's going to be very special in that offense. You know, they've produced tight ends obviously for many, many years. And so I think Brevin Jordan definitely stepped up his game. But Luke Ford at 6'7" is that prototypical NFL tight end. You know, you have Zach Ertz yesterday putting up nice numbers, taking his team to the Super Bowl. You always have big time tight ends like that across the league. And so Brevin Jordan, 3 or 4 years down the road, might have better stats, but we'll see who's drafted first. I think Brevin Jordan definitely has a chance to be very special at Miami and in the NFL. But I think, you know, the talk around Brevin Jordan in 3 or 4 years will be that he's 6'1 or 6'2, and that could be a concern.
Another one who's controversial is Asante Samuel. You know, Florida State fans obviously wanting him to be a five-star. He, you know, stayed right around the range. He was 46th in the country in our latest rankings and was very good at Under Armour. Was who we thought he was. And oftentimes when you are who we think you are, you're either going to stay where you are ranked or slide a little bit because other people will move ahead of you. So with so many new five stars, he slid 7 spots, but that's what we call, you know, irrelevant as far as a slide. He's a top 50 player in the country, just not very tall. And, you know, you could make the argument that Radley Hiles isn't very tall either. And you know, obviously Vernon Hargraves wasn't very tall. And he was drafted very high, although he's been horrible in the NFL, as I predicted he would be. But, you know, it's interesting because you got Radley Hiles at 17 and you got Asante Samuel at 46. It's not a huge difference, but one's a five-star. One's going to Oklahoma where they play wide-open football and it's harder for a corner, I think, to be a standout. One's going to Florida State where they have a tremendous reputation for defensive backs, obviously with Xavier Rhodes and Jalen Ramsey as two of the tops in the NFL. But we don't consider that. We don't look at that. And the reason we don't look at that is because coaches change, styles change. We've got a whole new coaching staff at Florida State. We've got, you know, a new head coach at Oklahoma. And who knows what's going to happen in their 4 years when it comes to defensive styles at those particular schools. So, but I get that Florida State fans are upset about Asante Samuel. You know, Jalen Green's not very tall either, and he's a terrific football player as well. Not as short as Asante Samuel, but there's a lot of guys I think in this class, you know, in the 35 to, you know, 55 range, even maybe into the 65, 75 range that are terrific players that could end up being better players than their ranking.
And just a side note on that, if you're in the top 100, you're a pretty damn good football player. You know, you can't be unhappy being ranked Asante Samuel's 46th in the entire country. That's not too bad. That means you're going to go to Florida State and have a chance to be special from day one. You know, I think we've entered a world where if you're a high 4-star now, you're kind of disappointed and underranked and not respected enough and all those kinds of things that we hear all the time. But, you know, those are pretty special football players. And yeah, Buki is undersized, but that kid hits like a Mack truck and nobody wants to go up against him because he's all in your face every single second. And he's more physical than most safeties out there, except for Tyreek Johnson, who's going to be a targeting concern every single play in college because he could have been kicked out of every practice in San Antonio for probably targeting somebody. But, you know, in that setting, I kind of like that physical nature. I like that he was no nonsense and he went out there. There are some kids who go to these events, and I think Dave saw it out in Hawaii, that like to stand on the sidelines and not do anything and not prove themselves. And he was out there smashing people around the field. So I like that kind of mentality, but he has to watch himself because he's going to be flagged for a lot of plays. And I've seen this in college especially, but also in the NFL. Once you get that reputation of a guy that's headhunting, refs are going to be out there to throw that flag immediately, even if you're not doing it. So, you know, I think corner is a very interesting group, because you do have Surtain, who I think is clearly the number one corner. He's a prototypical NFL cornerback. But then you do have some of these undersized guys like Buki, who on a good day is 5'10". And, you know, down the road, will that be a concern or a question mark for NFL teams? Probably. But Elijah Griffin isn't much taller, and he's much leaner. Asante Samuel is small. Isaac Taylor Stewart's a guy who probably looks the best. He and Surtain probably look the best, but Isaac Taylor Stewart needs to go out there every single second and prove himself as a guy that wants to shut down people and knock people around and shut down his side of the field. And so it's an interesting cornerback group, very, very talented up and down the list. I love Jalen Green. I thought he's a very special player in San Antonio. I think, you know, down the road, so many people have been talking about Anthony Cook as being the best player in the state for so long, but I think Jalen Green could be a guy that goes there and really earns that reputation as being the best player in this recruiting class. And so, you know, you have Al Blades. You just go down the list of all kinds of different sizes and shapes and skill sets, but all very, very talented players.
And then two guys I think are going to be very interesting, 62 and 63, Joey Gatewood and Matt Corral, quarterback position. Gatewood moving up 79 spots to number 62, having a tremendous Under Armour game, had a very good week overall in practice. He started off practice, you know, looking at his first read and then tucking and running every time. And then he developed throughout the week of going through his progressions a little bit more. And when the lights came on, he had a very solid game. So a lot of people who think he's a running quarterback first and can't really throw were proven wrong. And then Corral had a pretty good week out at Army, you know, and is a guy that's been talked about on this podcast numerous times. Super talented kid. So what did you see of him out there? He moved up 11 spots to 63.
Yeah, I saw Matt Corral a bunch during his senior season. And against good competition, he threw interceptions. He had 4 interceptions against Mission Viejo, 3 against Sarah. And they weren't tipped balls, and they weren't the receiver's fault. I mean, he just made bad decisions. But and that's been the concern with Matt Corral. And, you know, can he rein it in and throw the ball away instead of trying to make a special play? Sometimes, you know, most of the time, a quarterback's decision making is because he thinks he's got the arm to fit it into a really tight window, and he doesn't, and it gets picked off. But in San Antonio, he was much more of a better decision maker. He didn't make bad throws. He was super athletic. There's never been a question about Corral's athleticism or his arm strength, or his ability to prolong plays by getting out of the pocket. He's probably better throwing on the run. He kind of reminds me of Sam Darnold in that way. When Darnold sits in the pocket, he's not that great. But when he gets out and kind of can create, that's where Corral is extra special. And if he continues to mature on and off the field as a quarterback and goes to Ole Miss and really focuses in, he'll have the ability. He has the ability to be something special in the SEC and make Ole Miss maybe some sort of contender in the SEC West. We'll see how sanctions play into this and how everything goes with everything that's been going on there. We'll see what happens. But Matt Corral is absolutely a very talented player when his decision-making is on point.
And by the time you hear this, you know, the Rivals 250 could have been released. So I'm going to give you 4 guys that I really like near the top of the Rivals 250. All of them defensive: PJ Mustafer, Dante Stills, Connus Miller, and Nesta Silvera. I think there's a lot of value there at that particular position, which is a hard position to recruit. Not exactly a loaded position in this class. When you look at defensive tackle in the 2018 class, usually we have, you know, multiple defensive tackles up near the 5-star or in the 5-star range. I'm looking at the spreadsheet right now, and I don't see one. The highest ranked defensive tackle appears to be Rick Sandage, who's at 45 in the country.
Teron Vincent at 40.
Teron Vincent at 40, that's right. So you got 40 and 45, but you don't really have a lot of guys up near the top. And I think that position is going to be obviously coveted in the NFL. These guys go off to their particular schools, have big years, and I think they could be terrific football players. PJ Musper was very good at Under Armour. Connus Miller was okay during practice, but very active during the game and was terrific. And I think, you know, obviously I wasn't at Army, so I didn't get to see, you know, Nesta Silvera, but watched him in the game, and he was extremely athletic. and a kid that obviously impressed you guys quite a bit. So, you know, that's a position I think this class is weak in, and I think those four guys could be guys to watch for.
Yeah, Silvera was outstanding. You know, at these events, you sit in the stands and you watch and you're going, who's number 63 on this team? And you just keep looking back and looking back. And obviously he wasn't wearing 63. He was wearing something higher, but 92 or whatever. And it was Nesta Silvera. He was constantly around the ball, constantly active, always in, always, you know, never taking any plays off. Very, very active all week. I thought Jason Adamalola, the Notre Dame signee from Jersey City, I thought he was incredibly active and a guy who kind of played inside and outside, and that versatility could be special for him down the line. And then Tommy Togiai was phenomenal, I thought. He was just all over the place, a huge kid, at least 300 pounds, 6'3", I'd put him about 6'3", 305, but super athletic and fast, you know, just dominated centers and guards all week long. And in Pocatello, Idaho, he's not really facing elite competition, but he went down to San Antonio and did really, really well. And as we all know, Ohio State knows how to develop defensive linemen. He could be a special one down the line, too, that we look back and say, wow, you know, we always love those Polynesian defensive linemen, and he could have been the one that was really, really special in this class.
And a position I'm not sold on is offensive tackle. Nick Petitfrere is definitely our number one guy. He moved from non-5-star up to number one at offensive tackle. He's an athletic freak. He was actually on special teams in the Under Armour game making tackles, and he's a guy that I could see you could flip him to defense, and he'll be an outstanding defensive tackle or even defensive end. Just super athletic, great frame to fill out. Jackson Carman, I'm not sold on. I'm not sure if he's going to end up being a guard. I'm not sold on. Not sure if he's going to be a guard. You know, Bray Walker's massive and huge, but he looks like he's got to be a right tackle. Penei Sewell and Dillon Scaife, both very good players, but they don't really wow you. So when you're looking up and down, Rasheed Walker is the last 6.0 offensive tackle we have there as well. Not a great year at offensive tackle for 2018. For such a class that's so talented up and down, it's kind of weird that defensive tackle and offensive tackle aren't loaded with top players. So we might see hopefully a little bit more of that in 2019.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jackson Carman was a guy who is just massive. But you don't know, I think he has the feet to play offensive tackle, but when you look at him, you could easily say offensive guard. And I think that's something that we debated a little bit and tossed around. Will he move inside in the ACC? I think he has the feet and the speed to stay outside. He's certainly physical enough, but moving inside or outside, he should be really good. Bray Walker will be an interesting one. I hope we don't look back and regret not making him a 5-star because he's just so big. And Oklahoma, like we discussed in recent days, Oklahoma has really been developing. You know, Orlando Brown was really not a highly, highly talented kid coming out of high school, but they really developed him. Drew Samia out of Northern California was a little bit of a question mark, kind of on that 3-4-star fringe. He wasn't phenomenal at UCLA's summer camp, so we kind of went a little conservative on him. He's been very, very good there. And so they're developing offensive linemen more and more. So Bray Walker could be a pretty special prospect down the line. But a lot of these guys, Penei Sewell, a lot of the guys think he's going to move inside. We'll see. But yeah, definitely not a special group here. A lot of big, physical, strong kids, but a lot of those fringe offensive tackle, offensive guard bodies.
Yeah, and like I said, there's a quarterback out there somewhere who's a 3-star. I'm not sure who he is, who's going to be that next guy. Maybe he's not even a 3-star. Maybe he's a 2-star or isn't even ranked, but that's just the way the position works. It's the best quarterback class we've seen in quite some time. You know, even some of the guys, like we mentioned, Gatewood and Corral, who aren't 5-stars. Dorian Thompson-Robinson's another one who's very talented, but somewhere down there, there's going to be a guy. I'm not sure who it is, but plenty of quarterback talent. If you didn't get a good one this year, I'm not sure if you're going to get one in 2019, because 2019 looks very weak at the quarterback position. Running back is a good position as well. Wide receiver is always deep in every year, it seems, and cornerback is always deep in every year as well. So It's an interesting class. I think we could put a bow on it and really just sort of stop talking about it now that it's finally released. You know, the 250 comes out on Tuesday. We'll have the four stars outside of the 250 as well as the position rankings on Wednesday. And then we can move on to 2019. I think we might even be meeting next week on 2019. I got to ask you guys about that, but I know nobody wants to do that.
That's great to hear.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, you gotta do it. You gotta get these rankings done. We always do one in February for 2019 or for the rising seniors, so to speak, current juniors. And it just never ends, never stops. But this is a bow on this particular class. And, you know, there's plenty of accolades you could give to these guys. And we're going to look back on some of these five stars and be like, what were we thinking? You know, there'll be a Derek Green in here somewhere. You know, that type of five star is just like, what happened? Why didn't he become good? Who had fully reached his ceiling? And then, you know, there'll be a Blake Bortles, a quarterback that goes, I think he went in the top 10 in the draft, who, yeah. You know, was a three-star kid, didn't have any offers from Power 5 schools, went to UCF, got himself a nice little career there. And not that he's a superstar or anything like that, but turned out to be a first-rounder and led his team to the AFC Championship game. So we'll see who that quarterback is. But I'm getting plenty of notifications of messages, people calling us stupid for keeping Trevor Lawrence at number one, people calling us very, very stupid for not having Brevin Jordan as a five-star. You know, it's just going to be that today all day long. So I got to get back to our fans and let them know how much we love their team.
I tell them in 2 years, Mike, Trevor Lawrence is going to be tearing up the ACC. They'll remember it when they doubted you.
Yeah. I think it will be. That's my prediction, that he starts at Clemson next year.
Just freaky good.
That Kelly Bryant led his team to the college football playoff, but that's as far as he goes because there's no guarantees in anything. Jalen Hurts was 25-2 as a starter, and he just lost his job.
Maybe.
So then does Hunter Johnson transfer then?
I think so. I mean, Zarek, I was looking at the list when I was making that argument, and Kelly Bryant, Zarek Cooper, and Hunter Johnson are already on the roster, and Trevor Lawrence is coming in. So three of those guys are not going to be playing next year, and that would be the second year in a row for Johnson. And if I'm right, the third year for Zarek Cooper,
Mike? He just announced he's transferring, so...
Oh, I did not see that. So he's transferring. I believe Hunter Johnson will transfer. I hope he goes to a place like Indiana where he can put up big numbers and be the next Nate Sudfeld, who took the knee for the Philadelphia Eagles, the hometown team, Mike, of Adam Gorney.
Yeah.
He's going to the Super Bowl.
Now you get to lose to New England.
I would like to say this, though, for the Brevin Jordan detractors who claim we're idiots. There have been 8 five-star tight ends in the entire history of Rivals and then 7 high school tight ends in the entire history of Rivals, including Greg Olsen, Kyle Rudolph, and Martellus Bennett, who are, you know, have had pretty good NFL careers. So let's not act like we're just handing out 5-star tight ends every single second and every year. And none of them have been, of the high school guys, have been shorter than 6'6", except for Isaac Nada, who was 6'4", and was just an absolute beast in high school. So it's not exactly like, so Brevin Jordan, if we gave him the 5-star ranking, we would have to believe that he was the best tight end under 6'4", and the second best tight end under 6'6" in the last 15 years. And so I'm not sure we're there yet. And so his ranking, I think, is probably justified.
Well, the only people that care are Miami fans. And again, yeah, he signed. So if he hadn't signed and committed and he flipped to UCLA, they wouldn't care. So, but I knew that would be a tough one. I knew Silvera would be a tough one as well because, you know, he played very well all week. And he came outside the 250 to his ranking, which will appear tomorrow. But whatever. You can't please everybody. The only person who's happy with his ranking is the number one player in the country. And we put a bow on 2018. And I'm going to miss this class, honestly. I think it's a really, really good class. And I think it's the best since 2014. So, you know, 2019's not not thrilling me so far. We'll see. There's going to have
I'll
to
tell
be
you what, 2020 out here is absolutely phenomenal. There are at least 4 or 5 stars right now, and we'll move on from there. But let's do 2020 top 100 alphabetical, Mike. Let's get it going.
Well, that'll be March, so we got to meet on that too. So there's no rest for the weary. Thank goodness we had an early signing period, which you were completely against, because now signing day won't kill us, and we'll be able to focus on the 2019 ranking. So let's get out of here. This is a fairly short one, and let's see if how many technical difficulties we have with this bad boy.
see how much editing I get to do. All right, we'll get out of here. Like Mike said, we have the next signing day coming up in a couple of weeks. We'll see. There's not many guys on this Rivals 100 that are uncommitted, but we'll find out where they're going to end up. So we'll probably talk about that in the next week or the week after. So with that, we will get out of here. You can find us on Twitter, as always, @RivalsMike, @AdamGorney, and @RealDaveBerry. We'll see you guys next week.